talk shows. The kind of debate you'll see today requires speakers to use reason and evidence, to construct arguments, and to present their ideas clearly and succinctly within a fixed time period. Your programs explain how the debate is structured and give you some background on the different kinds of arguments you will see. I'd like right now to introduce our participants. We are honored to be hosting these student representatives of USC, and I promise them that we are going to give them a warm and hospitable Notre Dame welcome. Our first debater on behalf of USC is Michael Smith, a sophomore who is majoring in international relations and business administration. Mike's success in high school debate earned him a full tuition scholarship on USC's debate squad. This year, he was a semifinalist and a finalist at two of the most prestigious debate tournaments in the country. When I met him at the airport yesterday, Mike was carrying a printer as part of his carry-on luggage, which is really competitive. Our second debater representing USC is Brandon Hancock. Brandon, as you will see in your program, is competitive on many levels. Brandon maintains a 3.9 GPA as a communications major, which he calls an A-minus average, but as a professor, I'm going to say that we'll consider that an A average. Brandon has started two seasons as USC's football team as a fullback and hopes to finish his eligibility this fall. In his spare time, he co-hosts the program Coaching Confidential on ESPN, on ESPN Radio. He has received many academic honors, including being named ESPN Magazine's Academic All-District First Team and to the Pac-10 All-Academic. Brandon flew in this morning on the red eye from Los Angeles, the midnight flight, because he was honored last night with USC's Scholar Athlete of the Year Award. So let's get him out. We are truly grateful that he flew all that way just to be with us today. We are also honored to have Brandon's parents, Cheryl and Bill Hancock. Are you here yet? Okay, that's all right. We'll welcome them when they arrive with us this afternoon. Notre Dame is represented by the captains of our two teams, the parliamentary team and the policy team. We'll have some brochures available after the debate that will tell you more about these types of debates. The first debater for Notre Dame is Corey Melos, a sophomore majoring in the program in liberal studies and in psychology. Corey also competed in policy debate in high school in Wisconsin and won two state championships. He and his partner, Logan Zollner, a first-year student, recently competed for the 2006 Madison Cup at James Madison University, where they beat out Brown, Cornell, and William & Mary to place fourth. Corey, yes, that's right. Corey and Logan's performances this year earned Notre Dame the National Debate Tournament's Bradley Garrison Newcomer Award. In his spare time, Corey interviews congressional representatives for a public television station in his hometown. Our final debater for Notre Dame is Tim Fiorda. Tim graduates in a few weeks, much to our dismay. But as some of you know, he has some great choices to make in the meantime because he's been accepted to law school at Harvard, Yale, Virginia, and Notre Dame. We are very proud of that. As I like to say, this is what debate can do for you. Tim majors in political science here, and like Brandon, has been elected to Phi Beta Kappa, the oldest national honor society in the United States. When he isn't busy studying, Tim has served as a student broadcaster for Notre Dame football and basketball games. Academic debates have moderators who keep the time for each speech, as you'll see in your program. Our moderators today illustrate different parts of the university that come together in our topic. Our first moderator is John Carlson, a Notre Dame junior who is also a tight end for our football team. John? John majors in history and has, in his spare time, has compiled an impressive record of receptions and tackles. He has also played basketball for Notre Dame, which is not surprising since he finished his high school career in Minnesota with a total of 1,676 points, 974 rebounds, and 412 assists, and helped his school compile a 114-8 record. That is Rocky material. That really is that record. In his spare time, John also plays tennis and completed his prep career with a record of 106-22 in number one doubles. Last but not least, our second moderator is Mary Comperda, a first-year law student here at Notre Dame. Mary also graduated from the university in political science, and her senior thesis won top prize in the program in American Democracy, and she received multiple scholarship awards. Mary won several top speaker awards in debate tournaments around the country and ranked in the top 20 debate partnerships in the U.S. at the National Parliamentary Tournament of Excellence in 2002. She was also selected as one of two Notre Dame undergraduates to conduct junior year abroad studies at Oxford University in England. She graduated summa cum laude and Phi Beta Kappa from Notre Dame. So with Brandon, Tim, Mary, and me, we have four Phi Beta Kappa graduates on our stage today. You've seen the program. You'll see the order of debates. We'll have time for a question and answer session for you afterwards. And now that you've met everybody, oh, actually, one more, if I may. We also have with us the two directors of debate at USC. May I introduce David Damus, who is a graduate of USC and an attorney in Los Angeles, and compiled a very impressive record himself, debating for USC, and Julie Carver, the assistant director of debate at USC. Now, Julie is feeling somewhat torn today because she went to law school here at Notre Dame. So our debaters have been putting her through the ringer this week. So without further ado, I'm going to turn over the proceedings to the moderators and let the debate begin. Thank you.
Thank you all very much for coming today. We're going to be conducting the timing for the debate in the parliamentary debate style, which means we'll bang the gavel twice for each speech when there's 1 minute remaining, and then we'll pound it repeatedly when the time is up for each speech. And the order of the debate is going to go constructive, followed by cross-examination, where both sides can ask questions of each other. And John will be introducing each speech as we go through the round. So thank you again, and we hope you enjoy the debate.
The first affirmative constructive will come from Corey Malos, and it will be a six-minute speech.
I'd like to start by thanking everyone for being here today, especially our friends from the West Coast who traveled so far to make it for this first ever Notre Dame USC debate. And it was 80 years ago, rather, that Coach Rockne and the Notre Dame football team took a train out west in the other direction, going to USC back then for the first Notre Dame Southern California game, something quite rare for a team from the Midwest in those days. So before we debate 2006, I'd like to recognize those from both sidelines who have made the great rivalry possible. Interestingly enough, it was neither Newt Rockne nor Howard Johnson, but rather two women who were responsible for one of the greatest rivalries in football. ND versus USC, historical context. In 1926, the wife of Gwen Wilson, USC assistant athletic director, approached Mrs. Rockne at the end of a Notre Dame-Nebraska game. During the conversation, Mrs. Wilson suggested that the Southern California weather would make for an ideal road game, and Mrs. Rockne agreed. That evening, Mrs. Rockne convinced her husband and sold him on the idea, and the next fall, Rockne's squad traveled west to Southern California. Both teams fought hard in an evenly matched contest, and after 58 minutes, Notre Dame trailed Southern California However, with 2 minutes left in the fourth quarter, Irish quarterback Johnny Parsian threw a touchdown pass and Notre Dame held the Trojan offense the rest of the way to leave LA with a 13-12 victory. Hence, the rivalry was born. Since 1926, the University of Notre Dame and the University of Southern California have met 77 times, 14 Heisman Trophy winners and 13 national champions have emerged from the game. Notre Dame has won 42 times, Southern California 29. However, in 2004, Southern California tied its longest winning streak in its third straight victory, dominating three games by a combined 93 points before last year defeating Notre Dame 34-31 for a record fourth straight time, adding a fourth straight ruby to the shillelagh. Now we're going to talk about this year's game. My father used to say that those who forget their history are bound to repeat it. Well, we at Notre Dame have never lost five straight times to USC, and we sure have not forgotten last year's game. Therefore, this year it is resolved that the University of Notre Dame should defeat the University of Southern California in the 2006 Collegiate Football Contest. This brings me to my next point, why Notre Dame should win. First, execution. In the first year of the Whites era, Notre Dame's offense improved exponentially. Notre Dame amassed more than 1,600 yards with more efficiency, 1.1 more per play, produced 97 more first downs, executing at a 12% better third down conversion rate, and scored more touchdowns, 21 more, with greater discipline, 2 fewer turnovers. That was the first year in Coach Weiss's era at Notre Dame. For the first year coaches, it usually takes a learning curve to transplant a new offense, so if anything, the Irish offense will be even better in Coach Weiss's second year, especially when you consider experience. Notre Dame lost last year's game to an experienced team, which is losing 19 key players to the NFL draft, including key players at running back, quarterback, and offensive line, which leaves them with just 8 starters from last year's game. By contrast, the Irish lineup returns 9 starters on offense alone, including 18 overall. This translates to A, an advantage up front. Irish offensive line boasts 4 returning starters. B, in the air. 65% of the receiving core touchdowns remain intact, including the Shark, and an additional aerial dimension in returning starter Rima McKnight. And C, on the ground. Thomas and Walker bring 1,500 yards rushing to the backfield, including 144 yards from last year's game. Leadership. Fourth-year starting quarterback Brady Quinn exudes confidence as manifested in his accuracy, poise, and decision-making. In his first year under Coach Weiss, Quinn's completion rate climbed 10%. He threw for 1,500 more yards and 15 more touchdowns. Last year, he led the Irish to 10 of 19 third-down conversion rates in the ND-USC game, and including a clutch touchdown in the final few minutes against the Trojans. However, the Notre Dame offense is not going to be the only thing that will pose problems for USC. Second, nastiness. Tom Zbikowski leads a fierce-hitting Irish defense that steps up at opportune times. Zbikowski wreaks havoc on opposing ball carriers, making form tackles, creating turnovers, and yes, excelling in the open field. Last year, he picked off 5 passes, compiled 505 yards, 5th most on the Irish, and returned 4 punts and interceptions for touchdowns. Turnovers. The Irish forced 24-3 for touchdowns. Red zone D. Notre Dame held teams to a 75% scoring rate, denying the opposition 10 times and forcing 8 turnovers. And finally, our last criteria is desire. When sometimes you can't handle a single intangible to the game, it comes down to more than just offense, defense, or even fans. It comes down to the whole team and the will to win. And that's why Notre Dame should win the 2006 game against the University of Southern California.
Now we'll have a 2-minute cross-examination.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. So, Corey, after lunch, my partner Mike had mentioned to me that he tried out for the football team sometime recently. I was curious how that went for you.
Well, the first day I walked on, the second day they asked me to walk off.
It's tough. There's no chance that you might have to be related to Rudy, is there?
No, but I can't claim that honor. I am Irish, but I am related to a friend of mine who I just met recently, John Carlson, sitting at the table.
Fantastic. Well, both of us here, we're both curious to know how Coach Weiss's health is doing. You know, how's he been eating? Is he recovered fully? Mm-hmm. I think it might have a little bit of a factor as long as make sure he's at the game next year. Do you think he's doing all right?
Well, I've heard from his staff, and I think Coach Weiss is in pretty good shape. He just landed the top recruit in the country last weekend, and he's actually on the road right now. I think he just came back in for a change of clothes, and he's back out landing the top recruits in the country. So he seems good for my last time I heard from him.
I'm sure he's closing deals, man. So my next question is this. Do you think that the venue will have any impact on the outcome of next year's game, being at the Coliseum in Los Angeles?
I think going to the Coliseum is a tough place to play. We'll only have more incentive to beat USC this year.
Have you ever been to a game yourself at the Coliseum and seen the crowd, the energy, excitement, the peril that was going to be inflicted by extraneous variables in the atmosphere?
Well, I look forward to going this year, and I know when it comes to Notre Dame Stadium, if you've played at Notre Dame, then you can play anywhere.
All right. My last question here, I think we're running out of time, is I know you're losing some key players on defense, most notably at the linebacker position, and Brandon Hoyt and several others. Do you think it's going to pose any problem, considering that we have one of the best offensive lines that we've had in the last, I don't know, since Coach Carroll's been on campus? Do you think it's going to have a problem stopping the run game?
Actually, I think that the addition, the strong point at Notre Dame is that they return 9 stars on defense, including a solid line on defense, which will be pose some problems for the Trojan offensive line, especially for seniors.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
First negative constructive comes from Mike Smith, and it will be a 6-minute speech.
How are you guys? How are you? On behalf of the University of Southern California's 125th Trojan Debate Squad, I would like to thank the University of Notre Dame and their debate team for the opportunity to be here and discuss the very important topic tonight. Who will win the 2006 USC-Notre Dame football game? As most of you know, the storied rivalry between USC and Notre Dame dates back to 1926. On Saturday, November 25th, 2006, in the Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum, both teams will take the field with high expectations. And another game will begin between two of the best football programs in the country. Several key factors will decide who leaves the stadium a winner and who leaves hoping for revenge the next year. These deciding factors require analysis of key determinants of the game. It is our contention that three overriding factors will determine USC to come out victorious come November. First, history will prove itself. USC will emerge a winner due to its historical empirics and recent success. Second, we're going to give you a team-by-team comparison focusing on coaching, offense, defense, and recruiting. Finally, the intangible factors, the venue, the crowd, the Heisman winners. The first factor to consider is the history of the rivalry. Notre Dame's first football team established in 1887, USC's first football team established in 1888. Notre Dame All-Americans, 177, USC All-Americans, 126. Advantage Notre Dame. Notre Dame bowl games, 26. USC bowl games, 43. Advantage USC. Notre Dame bowl record, 13-13 with a 50% win percentage, compared to USC's bowl record of 28-15, a 65% win loss percentage. Advantage USC. Notre Dame series record with USC boasts 42 wins, 30 losses, and 5 ties. Advantage Notre Dame. But the series record at the LA Coliseum has USC with 19 wins, 17 losses, and 4 ties. Advantage USC. Heisman Trophy winners, Notre Dame, 7, USC, 7, a tie. National championships, Notre Dame, 11, USC, 11, a tie. However, the trend in the last 4 years, USC has won 4 of the last 5 meetings and has a 27-game win streak in the Coliseum. Advantage USC. A close historical comparison, no doubt. However, USC has the overall advantage by a slight edge. The second factor to consider is the team-by-team comparison. I'll discuss the relative recruiting classes, while my partner Brandon will focus on coaching, offense, and defense. USC has the number one recruiting class in the nation the past 4 years. Notre Dame, although attracting a top 5 recruiting class this year, has not been particularly strong in the previous 4 years. Recruiting is a very important factor to consider. As Heisman Trophy winners like Matt Leinart and Reggie Bush leave, they must then pass the torch to the new young stars of the men of Troy. The final factor to consider are the three intangibles. Sure, Notre Dame tradition leads a series, but first you must look at the great players that are born out of this game. For Notre Dame, Joe Montana, Tim Brown, Rocket Ishmael, Jerome Bettis, and who could forget the juggernaut Rudy Rudiger? For USC, Frank Gifford, Pat Hayden, Marcus Allen, Anthony Davis, O.J. Simpson, Mike Garrett, Ricky Bell, and Lynn Swann. Advantage USC. Second, Heisman trophies are won and lost in this game. Tim Brown, Carson Palmer, Matt Leinart, Reggie Bush. Recent history proves advantage USC. Finally, you can't beat the Coliseum as the venue. The weather, the grass, and the crowd. Now I'd like to address some of the arguments that he presented. He talks about execution being more efficient than the offense. Sure, Notre Dame might have its advantage, but this doesn't assume the stellar defense that USC boasts, with one of the best linebacking corps that college football has ever seen. Analysts agree that once these six linebackers graduate, they're most likely to be drafted within the first round. Second, it doesn't assume Coach Carroll being a defensive guru who also helped craft the Tampa 2 defense, which could help them against their offense. They make arguments about there's no experience. What they fail to realize is that the Notre Dame game happens at the end of the season, so by the time our recruits have had a full season under the belt, they're likely to gain the necessary experience. They talk about our quarterback. But coaches and outside sports analysts alike would tell you that Booty's progress prior to his career as a starter is far beyond that of where Matt Leinart was at that time. He has the potential to make similar, if not better, impacts in his first season. He's been in the system for 3 years so far. Brandon spoke to Booty the other day and told him that and John David Booty basically told him that his back feels much better and he's going to start throwing passes with him within a few weeks. They also talk about running back. However, if you look back to the season post-2002 where we lost Carson Palmer and 87% of our running yards, the next season, people like Lendell White and Reggie Bush stepped up their game in order to recover that deficiency. They also talk about our offensive line. They fail to recognize that our offensive line is actually quite good. We have such members as Ryan Fellell playing center, All-American Sam Baker, and a no longer injured Ryan Byers. As a reason to why that our offensive line will be much better. In conclusion, SC and Notre Dame are college football dynasties. And although many young men of one day waking up the echoes, or excuse me, and although many young men dream of one day waking up the echoes and shaking down the thunder, in the end, the recruit shows a program with the best chance for immediate success, SC. With Charlie Weiss at the helm, we are mindful that this advantage will be short-lived. Notre Dame is back, and we couldn't be happier. But while you were away, SC laid the groundwork that will lead to their victory this November. Thank you once again.
Now we'll have a two-minute cross-examination.
Is the rumor true that USC might not have ice on the sidelines for this year's game?
I'm sorry, what?
Is the rumor true that USC might not have ice on the sidelines for this year's game?
Ice?
Yeah.
I think that's true.
Okay. Because, the player graduated last year. Who knew? Oh, sorry, man. It was a UCLA joke, by the way. The player with the recipe graduated.
Awesome. Okay.
Okay, so...
Good job. Good execution also.
Speaking of execution, on the offense, what specifically do you have to assess the USC defense for this year outside the linebacking corps to stop Brady Quinn and the aerial assault?
We have an excellent defensive line. Cedric Ellis is an absolute beast. The other day in practice, Brandon told me he bench-pressed 225 41 times. He'll be able to tackle through your soft offensive line who are basically, you know, relying on freshmen coming out of high school who have no clue how vicious this guy is.
Okay. And aside from this one vicious guy on the other side of the ball, how do you plan to replace an All-American tackling with Winston Justice?
On the offensive line, we have Sam Baker, who's an All-American, coming back. Jeff Byers was injured last year. He's one of the highly recruited offensive linemen from the previous year. He's returning. Also, Ryan Fellell as a center is likely to be one of the top centers of next year. We think that the experience that they've gained through last year and through spring ball is enough to defend our quarterback and open up the run.
Okay. Okay. Speaking of the running back, he lost all 51 touchdowns last year, and you said in terms of a replacement, someone would be able to step up.
Right.
But given that the people who are stepping up aren't Lendell White and Reggie Bush, how are you going to add a running back?
Stephon Johnson, one of the top recruited running backs, is coming in. Chauncey Washington was academically ineligible for 2 years, is now returning next year. And within his freshman year, he was projected to be and was better than Reggie Bush and Lendell White.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I want to begin by thanking everybody for coming, and of course, consoling USC. I heard their library burned down, and apparently they lost both books, and one wasn't even colored in yet. So, sorry about that, guys. Hopefully you can rebuild. But going off Mike's arguments, I want to thank him for his speech. I'm going to go through these quickly, because honestly, historical context, Corey gave you a little bit, Mike gave you a little bit, but let's be honest, we're talking about next year's game. Tim Brown's not going to suit up, the Four Horsemen aren't going to suit up, Matt Leinart and Reggie Bush aren't going to suit up, so let's keep it on, I'm going to keep things more current. I think the only relevant points that were brought up there, 7 Heismans tied for national titles. I think after next year, Notre Dame will be one up again in both those categories, Brady Quinn and bringing another national title home. Additionally, the recent history, I wouldn't count on that. If you look at USC in the 80s, that's why the rivalry initially went down. So I wouldn't look to the past. I'd look to what both teams have coming next year. Now, if you look to what Mike's second contention is, the teams, and really this is where they'd like to avoid the debate going, but I'm going to blow this up, I think, a little bit when I extend Corey's arguments. All he really talks about is the recruiting. And I point out, well, I think Jimmy Clausen sees where the two teams are heading as far as recruiting goes, and he's going to be ahead here to South Bend because of that. But I'll talk a lot more about the teams that are coming back next season in a minute. Finally, the intangible contention. Again, all that I think is really relevant is the Coliseum point. Yeah, that's a tough venue to play at. USC has been very successful there. But at the same time, Notre Dame under Charlie Weiss, 5-0 on the road, hasn't lost. And some pretty tough games at the Big House isn't an easy place to win either. So Charlie Weiss, undefeated on road game. So I think he'll continue that in the Coliseum next year. Now, as to the teams proper, they talk about their great linebacking core, and I think what's important to consider, yes, linebackers are going to be great, but what does USC lose on defense? And I think it's very important. Darnell Bing, safety, we have led the team in safeties last year, 50 tackles, was an All-American, no longer with the team. In fact, 3/4 of the starting defensive secondary for USC is gone, and I think Brady Quinn had a pretty good day, as it was last year, with those three strong players. The other, Justin Wyatt, a cornerback, 34 tackles and interception. Scott Ware, safety, 51 tackles, 3 forced fumbles, and interception. Additional losses on defense, Frosty Rucker, first team All-Pac-10, great defensive end, no longer with the Trojans, and Lawan Ramsey, who had 40 tackles, 6.5 sacks. So saying the linebacking core is going to be great is fine and good, but Brady Quinn with a less effective pass rush without Frosty Rucker and a less strong defensive backfield with the loss of those 3 DBs, I think Brady Quinn's going to have a nice day against that secondary and defensive line. Second, I get an argument here about Booty, the fact that he's ahead of where Matt Leinart was. And first I would say the fact that Pete Carroll was relatively low on Matt Leinart before he started just shows you really can't judge a player until they're tested on the field in a tough situation. And Booty just hasn't had that experience yet in his career. So I'll give you 3 reasons why I think Booty is not going to have the season that Matt Leinart has been able to put together. First, that he's never been tested. He's never been in a situation 4th and 9 with 80,000 hostile fans, no margin for error like Matt Leinart was last year. So really his numbers have been compiled in relative ease, blowout games, not a whole lot of pressure on him as of yet. Secondly, the offensive line that USC is going to be losing. Corey alluded to this. Winston Justice and Fred Matua, 2 3-year starters, both left early for the NFL draft. And Deuce Latui, an All-American guard, all gone in front of Booty. And so I think when you look at Notre Dame's defensive line, 4 starters back, plenty of guys with experience, and a renewed focus on the pass rush, I think Booty's going to have his hands full with the Notre Dame defensive line come that game in the Coliseum next season. But additionally, besides just the offensive line, the running back situation is very important to consider, because for Matt Leinart, it's pretty easy to compile big passing numbers when you have Reggie Bush averaging 8.7 yards a touch, and you have Wendell White averaging over 100 yards a game and leading the country in scoring. So that's not going to be there for USC this year. Let's actually look at USC's running back situation. Considering they lose both those two players, who was next? Herschel Dennis started every game of his sophomore year ahead of Bush and White. He's out for the year, tore some ligaments in his knee. Desmond Reed, again, injured for the season. He was hurt at Notre Dame's game last year. Michael Coleman, the next back, he's recovering from a hip injury. Chauncey Washington was, as we mentioned, academically ineligible. He's been away from the game for 2 years. And even John Griffin, the walk-on junior running back, has been out all spring with a back injury. So the cover's bare for USC as far as the running game. So all that, considering Booty's inexperience, is going to make his job a heck of a lot tougher against a Notre Dame defense that's returning four starting defensive linemen and its entire starting secondary. So all things to consider for why Booty isn't going to be able to put up the numbers that Matt Leinart did against Notre Dame. So I think those are all important to consider as far as where the points are going to come from USC. Now, they can come up here and say Notre Dame's defense is questionable. I like Notre Dame in a shootout against anybody next season, including USC. Just 30 seconds left, so I'll go through a few more of the stats Notre Dame put up. And this was Weiss's first year, so a transition year. The growing pains that Weiss went through weren't too tough. Six times 40 points or more was the first Indy team in history with a 3,000-yard passer, 1,000-yard rusher, and 2,000-yard receivers. Maurice Stovall and Jeff Samardzija, who's back. Brady Quinn's already set 30 records for Notre Dame, individual career season. You name it, 30 career records, 32 touchdown passes, more than anyone else in major college football last year as a junior. So I think clearly with the Darius Walker, Travis Thomas coming back, and Raymond McKnight is a new threat USC didn't see last year, you can see why Notre Dame's going to win this game.
You made a bunch of good arguments relating to how Notre Dame has a bunch of returning good players. I'm just curious as to how many ranked teams did you guys beat last year?
Well, preseason ranked or ranked at the end of the year? I think five bowl teams eventually were Notre Dame's opponents. So yeah,
five
teams that went to bowl.
Which one really was again? Well, which one did you guys beat?
Michigan.
Michigan, so one.
Would be the marquee win that I think Notre Dame had against the solid bowl team. And, you know, it's tough. The schedule looked a little stronger on paper than it ended up by the end of the year. But it's not like, let's look at a common opponent, Stanford. I think Notre Dame and USC both managed 38 points against that team. So.
But they weren't ranked. Fair enough.
Right.
Okay. Let's talk about, you make a big deal about bashing on our running game. Have you considered Brandon Hancock taking carries, as he did a lot in the spring? What's your opinion on him?
My opinion is he's a pretty good guy. But David Curtin had a great year for USC last year. It's a big loss. They're big shoes to fill. I think Brandon can do it. But again, you know, David Curtin's another big loss to the draft that USC's going to have to deal with, and Brandon's going to have to step up and try and fill some big shoes. So.
Okay. Fair enough. You talk about your defense taking it over anything that's, you know, your defense being quite good. What's so good about your defense, considering last year they gave up 617 yards versus Ohio State?
Well, I think if you look at the Ohio State game specifically, there's some... Charlie Weiss talked about the problem that he had dealing for the first time with a month layoff between games, the bowl preparation, the team came in a little flat. And certainly there's needed improvement on the defensive side of the ball. But I think if you look at nine returning starters, all with more experience, you can expect a much better outcome from the Notre Dame defense this year.
What's better? It seems in the Ohio State game that the athletic linebackers of Ohio State put a lot of pressure on Brady. What's so good about the offensive line compared to last year?
Well, the offensive line was pretty good as it was last year, and there's four returning starters, Paul Duncan, and three freshmen coming in, so I'm pretty sure Brady's going to feel very comfortable behind them. And the defensive line for Ohio State was, I think, a little stronger than what USC's got coming back this year.
Now I'd like to introduce our second negative consensus given by Brandon Hancock for 6 minutes.
begin. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. On behalf of the Trojan Debate Squad, as well as the USC football team, I can thank the University of Notre Dame for this opportunity to discuss this ever so important topic. Who's going to take home a big win in next year's game? At this point, I want to focus my attention on the team comparisons. And there's certainly no better place to start than assessing the men who call the shots, the head honchos themselves, Coach Charlie Weiss and head coach Pete Carroll. Now, we're all well aware, actually, first before I say that, I think it's safe to say that this is going to be, both teams possess great strength in this area, and we need to give credit when credit is due. And with that said, we're all well aware that Coach Weiss had a very illustrious career in the NFL, ultimately serving as offensive coordinator for the Patriots. He had great offensive production, and molded a lot of good players, but I think what's even more impressive about him is his remarkable entrance into the college level, ultimately winning 75% of those games and accumulating a 9-3 record. I got to tell you, the competition in Division I athletics, especially in football, is very, very tough. And so for him to get those numbers, there's certainly nothing to be ashamed of. Those are rather stellar. So kudos to Mr. Weiss on that accomplishment. However, for the USC Trojans, head coach Pete Carroll named 2004 National Coach of the Year. I don't care how you look at it, but you absolutely just have to love this guy. From my personal experience in the last 4 years with him, I can tell you with 100% assurance, I've never met a man with more energy, more charisma, and more competitive spirit than Coach Carroll. And the passion you can see him exhibit on game day and every day at practice certainly reflects the numbers that he has acquired over the past four seasons. So, some brief numbers. Of those games, we won 92.3% of them, accumulating a 48-4 record. In two of those four seasons, we were rated number two in the AP polls 2 years, and the other 2 years we were crowned NCAA national champions, consecutively in 03 and 04. And also in those four seasons emerged three Heisman winners, a feat that's never been done in the history of college sports. So with such numbers, I think that's a testament to Coach Carroll's coaching ability and support the notion that he's the best coach in America. Advantage SC. Now moving on to the next component of this examination, I want to talk about the offensive side of the ball briefly. Again, I think the majority of the sports world would agree that offense is a strong asset for both of these teams. But we do need to face the facts here, that the quarterback advantage Notre Dame. You guys are boasting Brady Quinn as a returning All-American. He had a phenomenal breakout season last year, and he will certainly be a Heisman candidate next year as well. Couple the fact with that Weiss has reinvigorated your offensive potency, and several other skilled players, they rounded out. Samarja, Darius Walker, our buddy John that we just met here had to leave. That's going to make for a nice package overall. However, I personally believe the Trojans will have a slight advantage on the offensive side of the ball for one main reason, and it commonly gets overlooked. They claim that our offensive line is weak. Well, I disagree. The offensive line, I got to tell you, I see these guys on a daily basis lumbering around campus, and they're absolute behemoths, all right? These guys have more mass than a Catholic church. I mean, I'm a big guy, but I look like a preschooler when I'm lined up next to them, all right? But anyway, with one All-American returning and two preseason All-Americans coming back, also with the host of veterans, they mentioned the tackle problem, Chandler Shaw's returning. He's going to be a phenomenal asset to us. He's the same size as Winston Justice and runs just as fast. But having that being said, the significance of this is that even though we have an experience with the superstar running backs that are coming in as freshmen, they're going to open huge holes for those guys to gash defenses. They're going to protect our untested quarterbacks for the majority of the season. And that's going to allow them to get the ball into the hands of one of the most threatening receiving corps in the country with All-American Dwayne Jarrett, Steve Smith, and the freshman phenom last year, Patrick Turner. So, that being said and done, it's going to be a long day when you line up against these guys for 60 minutes. Advantage USC. Now, I'd like to take a moment to respond to the claims made by the opposition referring to execution in the Carroll defense. Bottom line, you say we lost Darnell Bing. Replace him with Scott Pinker. Scott Pinker, I'm pronouncing his name. The guy started at corner all 11 games, 11 of the 13 games last year. Frosty Rucker will be replaced with Jeff Schweiger, who had a broken foot last season, was a parade All-American in high school. Scott Ware, who made, I remember how many tackles you'd said, but anyway, Dallas Sars, who was a starting linebacker who was injured with a shoulder injury, will be moving to that safety spot, tall, lanky, fast, and athletic. And because we have such an influx of talented freshman linebackers that are coming in, we'll be the strongest, that'll be the strongest we've been at that spot in the history of Coach Carroll's tenure. And as you said, Booty has never been tested. I'll leave that for my partner to discuss. However, now that we've addressed both your arguments as well as some of ours, I'd like to share with you a Letterman-style top 10 list that my buddy Mikey here and I comprised of why USC is going to win this game. And I'm just going to give you the first seven. He's going to finish with the last three. Number 10, the USC cheerleaders. No better sight to see. Advantage, USC. Number 9, the USC band. The Spirit of Troy is going to rock the house. from November 25th, 2006. The Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum. The Trojans have not lost a single game at home since November of 1999. 7. USC groundskeepers. We're going to cut our grass. Advantage USC. Number 6. We paid Joe Montana to do our halftime speech, and he's promised he'd show up. Number 5. The USC mascot. Traveler will beat your leprechaun in a foot race any day of the week. And number 4, the last I'll leave you with, is USC's fullbacking core, strong, fast, and devastatingly handsome, I might add, will be very motivated for this game. So in conclusion, we believe this matchup has the potential to be one of the closest rivalry games in the history of this matchup. However, I don't know how it could be any closer than last year, but hey, it could happen. The Trojan debate team predicts that with only seconds left, USC will prevail with a last-second touchdown. If history is any indicator, we agree that anything can happen in this game. Both teams have all the elements to have a tremendous season, and this game should continue the tradition of excellence, not only in great athleticism and mutual respect, but most importantly, outstanding sportsmanship for both teams. Thank you.
So, Brandon, how many classes are you taking next year?
Actually, I'm starting grad school next year, and I'll be taking probably 16 units.
All right.
No ballet, but...
You got to buy books for those, too?
You got to do what? I'm sorry?
Buy books for those?
Yeah, the school covers them, but,
yeah. That's a testament. All right. Well, I'll ask you a question that Mike asked me. How are you going to fill David Kurtzman's shoes this year?
David Kurtzman, honestly, he was a third-string player when I started in 2003 on the NASCO National Championship team. Because of my injury, I came out and missed a year. He gained an advantage being a fifth-year senior, and there are other variables, too. We both complement each other. I was in and out with him 50-50 every play, part of the game. They liked to use him for a lot of the padding situations so they could bolster his statistics because they knew he was leaving for the NFL this year. I had 1 year back. And all honesty, I feel that I bring to the table almost the same skill sets that he does. Plus, my 40 time is about 0.3 seconds faster. And so I'll be able to block the outside zone, I'll be able to catch the wheel route, and hopefully help our team be able to score some points in this game.
All right. I looked at the spring readout for USC, and Herschel Dennis is listed as the next kick returner apparent after Reggie Bush leaving. So who's going to fill those shoes this year?
Could possibly be Kevin Thomas, who ran a 4.3640 in our combine testing last week, a DB, or possibly Kerry Harris. We have, like I said, we have a plethora of freshmen coming in, all of which are absolute freaks and phenoms physically. They could have a chance to carry the ball. And Coach Carroll, the way we play, he plays freshmen. He's not afraid to get them going, get them confident. So I'm sure by game 11, you'll see some of those guys be breakout stars.
All right. And you talked a little bit about you predict a late game win by USC. And I'm just, who's USC looking to in the huddle this year with all the leadership lost to step up, make a big play, maybe push somebody in the end zone?
I thought it was incidental contact. The play call was far right, 13 track. He was already running that way. He just bumped in on his accident. But hey, they're probably going to look to Dwayne Jarrett, two-time All-American, probably Ryan Khalil, preseason All-American, also Sam Baker, a freshman All-American and sophomore All-American last season.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.
First, I'd like to start with Brandon's point about the coaches in this contest, and both coaches come in with a highly impressive record and NFL pedigree, as Brandon says, and have a friendly rivalry they bring with them from the NFL. However, in Coach Carroll's second year is when he started to get the right players and started to become a dominant force in turning the USC program into a powerhouse. And Coach Weiss comes in with a 9-3 record, whereas Coach Carroll entered his second season with 7 wins. And we think if Coach Weiss and Coach Carroll are different people, but if they have anything they have from the NFL, that they will only progress in the second year. But moreover, this year it's only about the guys who are playing on the field. So therefore, the leadership and experience of the players that Notre Dame brings in 18 returning stars are going to be key. USC, as we mentioned, has a lot of holes to fill, not only in the backfield, but also on the other side of the ball, on defense. And this is going to be important because no matter how good of coaches you have, it always comes down at the end of the game to who's playing for you on the field and who's making the heads up plays. So next, on Brandon's point about defense, his first point is on the defensive and running backs. And he says that there's going to be several defensive returning backs. Even though they only have one star, that there will be several key players to help out the Trojan defense. Well, the Trojan running back situation is much like the Trojan defensive back situation. There's several key players which are returning from injury, whereas what we have from last year is that there's going to be 18 returning Irish players from last year's game who have experience in the game. Now, this is going to be key because when the Trojan players are going to have to face Brady Quinn for the first time, they're going to see a whole lot of stuff that they can't be able to see on tape. So that's going to be a completely different scenario. Now, the second point on linebackers, USC's linebackers may be strong, and yes, this is true, but when it comes to the defensive line, they have lost two key players, whereas the Irish offensive line, as we said, has experience in four returning stars, and it has that leadership behind them in Brady Quinn, two running backs who had 144 yards, and two key receivers in this game, not only the Shark, but yes, Reuben McKnight as well. Now I'd like to, in closing, I'd like to talk about the one thing that hasn't been talked about, whereas offense and defense are part of the intangibles to win a game, and yes, even the Coliseum is part of that too. What comes down to the end is it's a team game, and therefore the desire to win a football game has to come down to not just one side of the ball, but the whole overall features. And as Tim points out, the Irish under Coach Weiss are undefeated in the white jerseys, and that's going to offset the home field advantage at the Coliseum. But we have, in looking at their top 10, the advantage, actually, we believe, will go to ND due to the fact that the Irish are bringing back not only experience and leadership, but also we're bringing history with us. We have the will to win this year's game because we have not forgotten our history. And this year, when push comes to shove, Notre Dame is going to win because we want to win it more.
This is SC's last speech, our final chance to spare you Domers the heartache that you undoubtedly suffered last fall. My invitation to you, join the Trojan family. Our tent is large and we take all comers. There are some of you that will never see the light, but for those who have seen the wisdom of our arguments and may be considering replacing your blue and gold with cardinal and gold, this speech is for you. First, I believe it is a fair statement to say that the upcoming game in 2006 will be quite close, and at this point it's almost a coin toss as to who's going to win. But the one key tiebreaker you can't lose sight of is the Coliseum. 27 straight home game victories, not a single loss in the month of November under Coach Carroll, and four wins versus Notre Dame in the past 5 years. Our opponents have failed to answer these undisputed facts. Second, the team-by-team assessment. The intersection of our coaching staff and recruiting ability were proved deadly. As my partner Brandon spoke from personal experience, Coach Carroll has a unique ability to mold raw young talent into All-Americans, Heisman Trophy winners, and national champions. This season, I promise you that new young stars will emerge and fill the shoes of Trojans who have left for the NFL. They make notice about how Weiss is expected to improve. However, this doesn't take into account that Carroll expects one of our weakest components, our defensive backs, to be one of the strongest in the nation by mid-season due to the experience that they have gained and also with their training in the spring. They also make mention of our defense. However, they fail to realize that our linebackers, such as Oscar Lua and Keith Rivers, who are some of the most athletic, are similar to Ohio State, who put a lot of pressure on Brady Quinn in the game in which Ohio State put 617 yards up against them. Additionally, they talk about our secondary. They fail to realize that Josh Pinkert is no longer injured, is ready to come back. Additionally, the Dallas Stars is moving to the safety spot, who's lanky and similar to Scott Ware in his athletic ability. Also, defensive line. All-American Lawrence Jackson, incredibly strong, is coming back. Additionally, Jeff Schweiger, who also can fill the roles of people who have left. And finally, Avril Spicer, a freshman who was injured in the spring but is coming back, can bench press 630 pounds. That is similar. Was it squat? Squat 630 pounds. That's about six of these debaters right here. That'll prove that they can be quite a devastating force. In addition, third, my vision for the game. The grass will be short, the soil will be tight, and the Trojan players will run at full speed. Steve Smith and Dwayne Jarrett will run streak routes and burn your defensive backs. After a full season at the helm, John David Booty will emerge as SC's next Heisman hopeful. Our athletic linebackers will keep Brady Quinn on his toes and cause a lot of scrambling outside of the pocket. Oscar Lua, known as the run stuffer, will keep Darius Walker in check. Granted, Samardzija is sure to rack up over 100 yards and maybe a few touchdowns, but at the end of the day, Notre Dame's Tampa 2 defense will put a lot of pressure on your young middle linebackers. In conjunction with USC's veteran offensive line, this will allow Brandon to run up the middle and score the winning touchdown. One more devastating thing that they failed to realize is that their best defensive player is a better boxer and their best offensive player is a better baseball player. These are reasons that they have failed to compromise with the fact that our USC players are more committed to the game. Finally, my partner Brandon provided you with the first seven of our top 10 list of reasons that SC will beat Notre Dame on November 25th, 2006. Now the moment that you have all been waiting for, the top three. Number three, even with his burgeoning health beverage business, Daniel Rudy Rudiger is still a loser. Number two, surprise, Lou Holtz is no longer your coach. And finally, the number one reason SC will beat Notre Dame. Two words, secret weapon. During the game, yours truly, Mike Smith, will be midfield on the Notre Dame sideline, barbecuing honey-glazed ham, ribs, and big fat pork rinds, all of Charlie Weiss's favorites. I will strategically blow smoke in his direction. This will be an insurmountable distraction. And yeah, it'll be finger-licking good. On behalf of USC, I would like to personally thank our opponents, Corey and Tim, for a great debate. And thank you for giving us the opportunity to be here in beautiful South Bend. See you in November and fight on.
Thank you very much. And for the final speech of the round, Tim Fiordas will be giving the second affirmative rebuttal that consists of a 2-minute speech. All right.
Two minutes, I'll have to move. Now, after 3 years, I have to say first, I'm glad that we can even have this discussion coming from Notre Dame. I went through a couple tough seasons, so it's good to be having this discussion and that it's going to be a close game for sure. So all I can say for sure is whoever's lucky enough to get tickets for the Coliseum next year, it's going to be a great show, and I wish Brandon and the team the best of luck because it's been great getting to know them, great people. Now, I think we've shown you a few things, Corey and I, in this debate. Look at the offensive firepower for the Irish. I don't think they've adequately addressed that. But I think the biggest point would be the leadership. And I asked Brandon who they look to in the huddle next year. And he talks about Jarrett, a receiver who's no doubt very talented. But it's a little tougher to lead from wide receiver than quarterback or running back. You look to the quarterback to make a tough pass. You look to a running back to get those tough yards. And you need experienced players at those positions in tough situations. And that's what USC doesn't have last year. It was a real close game, and I think you can make the argument that the reason USC won at the end of last year's contest was just the determined effort of two senior leaders, two Heisman winners, who refused to lose that game. And I think if it's a tight game at the end of next year, as both teams seem to agree, I'm going to like Brady Quinn, Darius Walker, Travis Thomas, Jeff Samardzija, Raymond McKnight in that huddle trying to bring the game home for Notre Dame. So I think look at why USC won that game last year, and you can see why Notre Dame should win a tight one this year. The last point, I think, is intangibles. And, well, they talk about better baseball players, better boxers. Matt Leinart's a better dancer. We could go all around. But Tom Zbikowski sat down for an interview about his boxing debut, and he got asked if there was anyone in particular he'd like to face in the ring at some point during his professional career. Smile came on his face, and he said, anybody from USC. So I would say look out, Trojans. When Zibby and the Irish come to the Coliseum next year, they're going to win that game. So thanks to everybody, and it's been a good debate. Got some gifts for our guests as well.
And before we open up the debate to a general question and answer, we also want to thank the coaches and directors of the USC squad for coming all the way to Notre Dame. First of all, we'd like to recognize David Damus for coming. Thank you very much. Thank you. And also the Assistant Director of Forensics at USC, Julie Carver. And on behalf of the Notre Dame debate team, I think we should all give one more big round of applause to all four of our debaters here. And with that, I'll turn it over to Dr. Susan Omer.
Thank you again. This was a great debate. And this gives you an example of what we do on the debate team. And there's been some talk of us coming to SC to debate them. So if you're involved with debate next year, think about it. Think about it. This could be your moment. In planning the event this afternoon, we wanted to allow time for you to ask questions of the debaters. Now, how would you like to do that? Now that you're up here, do you want to sit there? Do you want to move the tables forward? What do you think? You're okay? We can, like, push these aside, maybe? Before we begin, just one ground rule. Some of you may have heard about recent developments involving players in the USC football team. It is the policy of both USC and Notre Dame not to comment on pending investigations. So we will not, and I mean not, this is Professor Omer talking, be able to take questions today involving Reggie Bush or Mark Sanchez. So in the spirit of continuing on a great note, here's your chance to ask questions of the debaters. Mary, would you like to? Okay.
Just a question for you guys. As far as quarterback situation goes, I think you're forgetting one thing. That was Norm Chow. Norm Chow was instrumental in the development of both Carson Palmer, who won the Heisman, and Matt Lyon, who won the Heisman.
What you may fail to realize is that when Coach Chow was there, assistant quarterback coach was Steve Sarkisian, and he was there not only for Carson Palmer's Heisman run, and he was also there for Matt Leinart's Heisman run. The one year that he wasn't there, I believe, was when he went to the Oakland Raiders. So he's been the catalyst that's helped propel that whole thing forward, too, and been kind of pumping that machine. There's no doubt about it. I mean, Coach Chow, he's playing the best around at what he does in calling offenses. He knows how to scheme defenses really well. And, you know, it may have affected us slightly last year not having him around. I think we did a fantastic job regardless with Lane Kiffin, whose father was Monty Kiffin, the defensive guru in the NFL. And Steve Sarkisian. But Steve has been around. He's one of all the quarterbacks we've had at USC, including those two Heisman Trophy winners. And he's already been working diligently. Over the last 3 years, you see John David Booty with his pen and pad and learning from, you know, arguably the best quarterback in the country this year. So when you have that much time to sit back and absorb not only, you know, the schematics of the game, the reads, the looks, but also the emotion, the way to keep your poise, the way to lead, I think that he is very, like, you know, my partner mentioned, Coach Carroll is confident. He said that he thinks that he is further along in his progress now than Matt Leinart was in the spring going into his year when he became the starter for USC.
You said that the Trojans basically had developed better since Matt Leinart. The question is, then the meteor will be true with regard to one song.
Good point. Oh, there is. I mean, you guys don't travel your band, if I'm correct, right? To that camp? Oh, you do? Oh, okay. I'll probably do that. Both bands are great, and I know our song gets a little annoying at times. It even bothers me.
Oh,
That's kind of funny. It's a little bit of a sore subject, but my buddy actually dated that cheerleader. You can believe that when I received an influx of emails with that photo, and they had dressed it up like the MasterCard commercial. I don't know if you guys saw the price list, you know. They say, you know, USC tuition, $41,000. Hair coloration products, $2,000. Cheering for the wrong team at the end of the season, the biggest game of the year, priceless. That was the one I got. But anyway, when I had that, I definitely forwarded it to his account right away so I could go in his face. But, I mean, yeah, my defense to her is she probably thought there was a fumble and that we got the ball back.
First of all, as a Notre Dame law student who went to USC for undergrad, I just want to say quite on. I'm probably the only person in this room who isn't in the front row on stage as best he can. I also just wondering, in general, how big of an advantage do you think USC's schedule next season as opposed to this season is in terms of the fact that a lot of the tougher games are at the end of the season and they're all at home, most of the tougher games are at home, so the new players have a chance. I know you briefly mentioned this, but I'm just wondering how big of a deal you think that is, that the newer players will have an opportunity to kind of learn the ropes. Not to say that, you know, the early teams are going to be easy, but that it'll be a little bit that if this year's team, like last year's schedule, it might have been much harder.
Well, I think it definitely plays the benefit of us by being able to take the first couple games. I mean, we're not playing a bunch of slouches, mind you, but it's a big transition coming from high school into the college level. The speed, the size, all of a sudden you can't break away from people like you used to. You can't run over people like you used to. And so it takes it a lot of adjusting to get used to. And even more so than that is the mental aspect of the game. You have to take in so much. I mean, there's so much more complexities, variables. I mean, you have to learn how to read different situations. So by having those games early on, I think it's going to be a good time to throw guys into the fire. We can make some mistakes. I mean, we still have plenty of veterans to hopefully build some leads in those games, but that's going to help us out because, and even on top of that, the emotion. I remember when I came out of the tunnel the first time as a freshman, I was on the kickoff team. And it's a feeling that you will never feel. It's the first time, and you walk out, and there's 90,000 people in the vast Coliseum, you know, top to bottom, screaming. It's something that is different. But I think that by having that early on, it's going to allow guys to develop their skills, hone their game skills, because it's much different from practice than it is to the game. There's just a different intensity. There's a different energy. The speed is different. The conditioning feels different. So I believe by doing this, and having to get some teams out of the way that may be easier for us to handle. The come time when we get to the breadth of the Pac-10, we start playing Cal and Oregon and all the tough guys on our schedule, and ultimately, UCLA and Notre Dame at the end, it will be a much more polished team in that sense and ready to handle those challenges.
I would like to invite both debate teams to answer this question. To comment on Notre Dame's recent recruiting success, I think you all know I'm referring to Jimmy Clausen coming out of California. For a player coming out of Southern California to commit to go to Notre Dame, that says something right there about the future of each program. And I would just like to invite both podiums to sort of comment on that particular aspect.
Well, I'd say it's definitely a big pickup for Notre Dame, especially with all the press that has come with it. You can't put too much stock in one player, so you know it's not the be-all and end-all of recruiting. Pete Carroll still does a great job and has the stranglehold on most of the players in California. But I think it just shows that top prospects want to play with Charlie Weiss because Charlie Weiss knows what it takes to get players in the NFL. He knows what scouts are looking for, what offensive coordinators are looking for, and look at what he did with Maurice Stovall in 1 year. He was not even reasonably able to be considered a draft prospect before his senior year, and he's talking late first round, early second round. So I think players see that, and that's going to help Charlie Weiss continue to get some of the best athletes into the future.
I would agree. You know, I'd say that Coach Weiss is definitely going to improve the team's stock and the recruiting aspect of the game. But like you know, we have one example of a guy from California coming to Notre Dame. I mean, again, Coach Carroll, not only does he stranglehold, as you mentioned, a lot of guys in California, but he plucks guys out of Ohio, you know, Florida, all across the country, New York, New Jersey. I mean, so, and Coach Carroll, I think, is one of the best around. I mean, he's a guy that he's very approachable. He's kind of on the same wavelength. He's got a lot of energy. Because from my own experience in recruiting, you meet some head coaches that are kind of a little up in their years. They're a little more stoic, and they're not as, you know, they don't invite you, and you don't feel like their passion as much. And Coach Carroll does a phenomenal job with that. And I think that, you know, as long as these two coaches are going head-to-head, they're both going to ultimately do a fantastic job. And I'm sure that as this program continues to get better, which I'm sure it will, I mean, like you said, first year, last year, you win 75% of your games. That's something that's really, really tough to do. And the more you win, the easier it is to pluck guys, and so eventually it's going to be a dogfight between both Coach Carroll and Charlie West.
Well, Charlie Weiss does a great job of his philosophy is one game at a time, and you can be sure that the only game Notre Dame is worried about right now is the season opener. So when you take that approach and you get the team mentality, I don't think anyone's going to be very worried about the hype, and especially at that point in the season, 12 games in, a lot of that stuff, you never know what the situation's going to be at that point, if any of that talk's even going to be relevant anymore. So I think a lot of that will come to pass as the season goes on. But at the same time, I think Coach Weiss is very good at deflecting that sort of edginess from the team or whatever by just focusing week to week.
I think you make a good point there, because I think a lot of fans build a lot of build-up into, you know, the rivalry game for us, UCLA, and obviously Notre Dame. And they are the ones that want to project ahead a lot, but we're not allowed to do that, because I'm sure we have the same mentality. We want to win national championships, as do they. And if you look ahead, you slip one game, then what's the point? If you lose to Oregon State, then who cares if you beat Notre Dame? I mean, it's icing on the cake for some people, but for us as players, we've lost the entire focus of our season. And that's to go to the Rose Bowl ultimately and then to move on to the national championship and go undefeated. So, yeah, I'm sure he employs the same philosophy. You know, play between the lines is game to game. We got to take care of step by step.
I'd also like to hear from both Williams. Talking about going game to game and everything, I'm wondering how likely EM teams feel like it would be for USC by coming into their main game at the end of the season. They've already had one loss in their season, if not maybe a couple.
You want to start? How'd you want to do it?
Well, I think that, I mean, USC has had a tremendous, tremendous dominance in the Pac-10 the last few years. They're starting out with Arkansas this year, and so they'll play a couple tough teams right away. But the Pac-10 is getting better over the years. It's not. It's definitely not the same caliber of schedule that Notre Dame is going to be playing, especially this year. But they don't have a lot of players who will be playing don't have the experience. So you don't know what's going to happen in some of these games they haven't played before. But at the same time, Coach Carroll, the last few years they have beat Arizona State every year. The last 4 years, I believe, for sure. And UCLA, I think, probably will be the tougher of the two opponents because they're starting to be a lot better.
There's no question. I mean, the Pac-10, it's a run of the gauntlet every year. You never know who can fire up and have a great season. It's a very volatile conference, so you just got to approach each game one at a time. And the thing that's tough with this, too, is as naturally in the sport, it's a violent game, you're going to pick up injuries here and there that can deplete the strength of your team. We had that last year in numerous games. And the biggest challenge is molding these young players and giving them the opportunity to play enough to where they can feel confident coming in and performing when they're under pressure right away. Because a lot of them all have the talent, they'll have the ability, but it's the confidence, too, that's a huge factor. So I think that's what helps propel teams throughout the majority of their season and ultimately get to the last game. You got to have people that can step up when other guys go down.
And by the way, we hope that they come in undefeated.
As we do, too. Yeah. No doubt.
Building off that last response, and this might be the first time since 1988 that both teams come into the game undefeated, how many Southern Cal fans do you think will be in the 90,000 seats? Do you think it'll be 85,000, Texas, 5,000, Notre Dame, 80,000, 50,000?
No. Generally, we're pretty good about keeping it pretty even. I mean, every game I've been there, they've all been sellouts, and it's pretty much, I think they're pretty respectful and generous in the ticketing office. Because I understand that you guys, it means a lot to Notre Dame that you guys are going to travel well and fill it up. And it's generally pretty even. I mean, I'd say maybe 40-60, but that's what it's been in the past, and I'm sure that's what it'll be. And even people come that don't even get into the game. They come, they hang out in the parking lots. That's how important it is to everyone. So I got to tell you, it's definitely the loudest stadium. And it's the most respectful rivalry, too, in my opinion, man. I mean, I know my parents, have, you know, after the games, they've been around, and your fans would come and congratulate us, even as, you know, as crazy as that finish was last season. And that doesn't happen in a lot of matchups. You know, there's trash talk and people throw beers and stuff. But Notre Dame, I think this is it's such a long-standing traditional rivalry that people respect it enough to appreciate it for what it is.
And maybe just conclude by thanking our debaters once again for a very